Today's episode of The Y-Files is brought to you by Delete Me. In 2009, scientists tested a fragment of Hitler's skull. The results showed it belonged to a woman under 40. The evidence of Hitler's death, evidence we trusted for 60 years, was fake. In 2022, researchers found a Nazi submarine off Argentina's coast. It was intentionally hidden. When asked to investigate, Argentina said no. They're still saying no. For 32 years, the FBI ran their longest manhunt ever. They were looking for Adolf Hitler. But history says Hitler died in his bunker on April 30th, 1945. Why was the FBI tracking a dead man? And why was Stalin so convinced Hitler escaped to Argentina? Well, information is hard to find. Because someone wanted this buried, and they still do. Because accepting Hitler escaped means accepting something far worse. The most evil man in history didn't just survive, he was protected. And not just by Argentina.
A slice that's so thin that it used to liquefy in the...
Yeah, human! Thank goodness! I'm in big trouble! They're after me!
Whoa! Who's after you now?
The Mafia! You know, the Cosa Nostra?
Oh no, Don Barracuda?
The Godfather himself.
Why? I thought you paid him back.
I did!
With interest?
Well, of course! It was the only thing I could think about.
No, not that kind of interest. What makes you think the Mafia's after you?
Today, in the mail, I got a Sicilian message.
Uh-oh, a horse head in your bed?
No.
A dead fish in a shoebox?
No, it was a coupon for free cannoli at Palermo.
Palermo?
Yeah, it's the capital of Sicily.
I know what Palermo is.
It's also the name of that Sicilian restaurant that just opened in the neighborhood.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call a free cannoli a life-threatening situation.
I'm pre-diabetic. Plus, I just got a call from a waste management company trying to upgrade me to a tree-yard dumpster. And 10 minutes ago, a concrete salesman was here threatening me.
How did he threaten you?
Well, he said if we don't patch the driveway, we could end up with water damage.
Yeah, I think he was just trying to sell you his services.
Hello, paisano, I know. The problem is, how do all these people know where I live?
Look, I told you not to enter that raffle at last year's San Gennaro's feast.
What? And pass up a chance for a lifetime of free Zeppelis?
I thought you're pre-diabetic.
Stay focused.
Well, you gave them your name, your phone number, your address. They turned around and sold all that information to data brokers. That's where you're getting all these calls.
No, I'm going to have to go on the run again. I could probably stay at my cousin Joey in Portland. I just don't know if there's enough room for me and Gertie in his tent.
You don't have to move. Just use Delete Me.
Oh, did you just bada-bing your way into today's sponsor?
I sure did. Delete Me is a hands-free subscription service that removes your personal information that's being sold online. Their team of privacy experts removes you from hundreds of data brokers all year long. And in just 7 days, you'll receive a detailed privacy report showing exactly where your information was found and removed. Delete Me removes your personal data like phone numbers, addresses, and more. Plus, their monitoring system ensures that your data stays gone, repeating removals as needed. And here's the best part. With Delete Me, you're in control. You can make custom removal requests, tailoring your privacy protection to fit your needs.
But how can I trust them not to sell my data like these other jamooks?
Delete Me protects users' privacy by collecting only essential data needed for removal from data broker sites. The company operates independently, never selling user information and handling all removals in-house. Their mission? Keep private information private. To start protecting your personal data, go to joindeleteme.com/thewyfiles and use code thewyfiles to receive 20% off Delete Me consumer plans.
Code thewyfiles for 20% off?
That's right.
No more ads, no more phone calls, and me and my grandma don't have to move?
No more ads, no more phone calls, and as an Italian-American, please, no more mafia stereotypes.
Yeah, I can't promise you that, paisano. Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
It's April 1945 and Berlin is in ruins. Hitler and Eva Braun started their escape on April 28th, 2 days before their alleged deaths. They slipped through a secret tunnel connecting Hitler's study to the Berlin subway system. A makeshift airstrip was set up, and a Junkers Ju-52 transport plane was fueled up and standing by.
Junkers? You mean Yonkers, north of the city, where my cousin Monty lives.
Not Yonkers, Junkers. It's German.
Yeah, I still wouldn't trust a plane called a Junker.
Junker.
What'd I say?
The plane took off at 3 a.m. carrying Hitler, Eva, and a few others. Bad weather kept Soviet fighters grounded that night. No radar picked up the flight. It was a clean getaway. Their first stop was Denmark at an old Zeppelin base.
Say, hey, Mama, said the way you move, gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Okay.
What?
Not that Zeppelin.
Oh, not the band, the dirigible?
Dirigible?
Yeah, it means airship.
I know what it means. Can I just get through this?
Fine. Go ahead. Sheesh, what a grouch.
A group of wounded German soldiers gathered near the runway to meet Hitler. Several witnesses reported seeing him there. After refueling, they landed at a Baltic airfield to switch planes. And this plane was special, a long-range aircraft from a secret Luftwaffe unit that had been flying Nazi officials to safety for months. Spain was next. Franco's government, paid in Nazi gold, provided a Spanish Air Force plane for the flight to the Canary Islands. Spain claimed neutrality during the war, but newly discovered documents proved they were secretly helping the Nazis. They landed at Villa Winter, a fortress built by Germany with one purpose: escape. It had a massive radio antenna for maintaining contact with Berlin and Buenos Aires. The facility had a runway for large aircraft and a deep harbor perfect for submarines. Three U-boats from the Seawolf group waited offshore. These weren't combat subs. They were modified for escape. Hitler boarded U-518, an IXC-class sub. An IXC could run silent on batteries for days. On a full charge, they can cross the Atlantic and back. They were big enough for passengers, supplies, and something else: medical equipment. And here's our first historical snag. Official Navy records say U-518 was sunk during Operation Teardrop in April 1945. The USS Carter gets credit for the kill. One problem: the wreckage was never found. Not then, not now. We know the exact coordinates where it was supposedly destroyed, and not a speck of it has ever been seen. A 250-foot steel boat weighing over 200 tons vanished without a trace. Then a police report from Argentina revealed something impossible. The submarine wasn't lost. It was exactly where it was supposed to be. The report came from Don Luis Mariotti, police commissioner in Necochea, Argentina. His officers caught a German signaling an unidentified vessel offshore. Under interrogation, the man admitted it was a submarine looking for a safe landing spot. The next morning, Mariotti's men found fresh tire tracks on the beach. Five officers followed them, but were stopped by armed German soldiers. When Mariotti reported this, his superiors ordered him to forget what he saw and release the prisoner. This was dismissed as conspiracy theory until 2022. Argentine researcher Abel Basti found evidence of German U-boats operating along the coast long after the war ended. He found eyewitnesses. He found naval records. He even found the exact coordinates where witnesses said the subs were scuttled. The government called it fantasy, so Basti got funding and dove the site. They found a modified German submarine exactly where witnesses said it would be, right off the coast, intentionally sunk in shallow water. Argentina's response? Those aren't Nazi subs, they're rock formations.
Ah, yes, the U-boat-shaped rocks of Argentina. Lovely this time of year.
Basti got a second opinion from researchers in France. Not only was this a sub, it was a Nazi sub. He got a third opinion from the Italians. Not only was it a Nazi sub, it was an IXC-40 U-boat, the exact type witnesses saw carrying Hitler. The mastermind of Hitler's escape was Martin Bormann, his closest advisor and Nazi party minister during the war. While Germany struggled to achieve victory, Bormann planned for defeat. The Reich would survive, even if Germany fell. In August 1944, he launched Operation Eagle Flight. The plan? move Nazi wealth out of Germany. Bormann created over 750 front companies across 15 different countries. Swiss banks laundered money through networks stretching from Madrid to Buenos Aires. Patents and technical documents were transferred to foreign subsidiaries. Art collections were smuggled piece by piece through Spain, and gold was converted to bearer bonds.
Oh, hang on. Bearer bonds? Those are the things that Eddie Murphy found in Beverly Hills Cop.
Right.
And Die Hard.
Yep.
And Lethal Weapon. License to Kill. The Goonies.
Right. Bearer bonds are like cash. Whoever physically holds the bond, the bearer holds the money. No questions asked. They could be worth $50 or $50 million. No records, no names, completely anonymous.
God, the government doesn't like it when it can't track the money.
They don't. That's why bearer bonds aren't used much anymore. But before World War II, they were common and legally accepted almost anywhere. Bormann shipped bonds and assets using diplomatic pouches.
Yeah, I gotta stop you again, yeah. What pouch?
Well, you've heard of diplomatic immunity?
Yeah, from Lethal Weapon 2.
Of course.
Diplomatic immunity!
According to international law, diplomats can't be prosecuted, arrested, or detained for violations of the host country's laws, even for serious crimes. Their homes, documents, and communications can't be searched or seized. A dip pouch has the same protection. It can be a bag, a box, or even a shipping container. The Vatican was part of Eagle Flight. The Vatican Bank answers to nobody. I covered the Vatican Bank in our episode about Operation Gladio, where the CIA worked with the Mafia and the Vatican to create a secret illegal terrorist army.
Gladio, link down in your tickle tote.
The Vatican also helped move people. Bishop Alois Hudal provided documentation and safe passage for high-ranking Nazis. The church's rat lines stretched across Europe to South America. And when the church couldn't help, the Red Cross could.
Whoa, the Red Cross helped Nazis escape? Like the Red Cross?
Yep.
Yeah, next you'll be telling me UNICEF was running weapons.
Actually.
No way!
Different episode. The Nazis had built more than just a refuge in Argentina. They built a shadow state with its own territory, government, and military. And now the new German state had a leader. They just needed to get him there alive. The next phase of Martin Bormann's escape plan was Operation Land of Fire. Create a secret paradise in Patagonia, Argentina. The area was perfect. Vast, isolated, and already had a large German population. Juan Perón was the president of Argentina and longtime supporter of Hitler. His government issued thousands of fake passports. Police were ordered to ignore certain ships and trucks moving at night. Local Nazi sympathizers in key positions helped Bormann create a network of secure estates. Each one shared specific features: remote locations, escape routes, bunkers, and medical facilities specializing in Parkinson's disease.
Wait, he had that?
He did, but his staff tried hiding it. As the war went on, he was rarely seen in public. Most photos were carefully staged to avoid showing his trembling left hand.
Oh, like FDR.
Right. President Roosevelt had polio. He could barely walk. He was always in a wheelchair. But at the time, most Americans didn't know. The press was told to hide his condition.
The media would lie about a president's health? I don't believe it. What? Too soon?
The OSS, American Military Intelligence, knew something was happening. They tracked ships leaving Spanish ports. They monitored Swiss bank transfers. They watched German scientists disappear from Europe, then reappear in South America. But they missed the big picture. Operation Eagle Flight wasn't just an evacuation plan. It wasn't just about saving Nazi wealth. It was about building infrastructure, a network of secure facilities managed by loyal supporters. This system was designed to protect someone important, someone specific, someone who needed constant medical care. Then the OSS decoded a message from Bormann to Argentina. It was only three words. The package arrives. San Carlos de Bariloche is hidden in Argentina's Patagonia region. By 1945, it looked like Germany had been dropped into South America. Over 30,000 Germans poured in after the war. German was the local language. Street signs were in German. Children learned from Nazi textbooks. The FBI tracked millions flowing in from Swiss banks. Spanish buildings were replaced by German. In the mountains, they built something else, an alcove. A fortress disguised as a mansion. An alcove was a command center. It had underground generators, security quarters, hidden rooms, escape tunnels, and advanced radio equipment. A watchtower overlooked a concrete bunker. A ramp led to a boathouse hiding a seaplane. His staff was carefully chosen. Dr. Otto Lehmann, Parkinson's specialist. Heinrich Bethe, former U-boat commander, was security chief. Both worked directly for Hitler before the war. The area was crawling with Nazi fugitives living in plain sight. Erich Priebke, who massacred 335 Italians, ran a deli in town. He was caught by ABC News in 1994.
You were just following orders?
Yes, of course, yes. But I didn't shoot anybody.
He actually denied that he had shot anyone personally. But we had papers from a British prisoner of war camp where he had admitted shooting two people.
Adolf Eichmann lived nearby before moving to Buenos Aires. Mossad captured him in 1960. Josef Mengele, the infamous Angel of Death, lived in the town for a while. He was never caught. Catalina Gomero was a maid for wealthy Nazi sympathizers. She said Hitler stayed at their estate. She was told to never repeat what she saw.
Estuvo Hitler ahí, sí. Estuvo tres días. Yo sí. Eso yo porque mismo los choferes y todo. El padre Mónica también en el este. Pero nosotros teníamos que callarlo la boca. O perdíamos el trabajo o... Y después lo agarré a Luis yo y le digo, che Luis, cállate, me dice, no digas nada. Y si usted, él, ahí había foto de él y después no, uno, por más que no tenga video.
A hotel owner reported serving an elderly gentleman with a distinctive mustache in 1953. A local boy saw the same man walking in Alco's grounds at night. A housekeeper cleaned a study filled with maps and German military photos. For years, Hitler lived quietly at Analco with Eva and their daughter. But his marriage was failing and his health declining. Then in 1955, everything changed. Argentina's government was overthrown. Juan Perón fled the country. And without his protection, Hitler had to run again. But his past was about to catch up with him. Without Perón's protection, Hitler moved deeper into hiding at La Clara Estate. But even here, witnesses kept seeing him. A farmer described an elderly man with a trembling left arm being helped along a mountain path. A shopkeeper recalled a German customer who used a cane and spoke with a slurred Austrian accent. This was all a conspiracy theory. Then in 2017, everything changed. Remember those JFK files that went public?
Yeah, I remember. They still held back the good stuff.
They did. But buried in those files was something that wasn't supposed to be there. A CIA memo from 1955.
CI Melody 3 was contacted on 29th of September 1955 by a trusted friend who served under his command in Europe and who is presently residing in Maracaibo. CI Melody 3 preferred not to reveal the identity of his friend. CI Melody 3's friend stated that during the latter part of September 1955, Philip Citrin, former German SS trooper, stated to him confidentially that Adolf Hitler is still alive.
This is important.
Oh, there's more. The memo included a photo.
What?
Hitler left Colombia for Argentina around January 1955. Citrin commented that inasmuch as 10 years have passed since the end of World War II, the Allies could no longer prosecute Hitler as a criminal of war.
What happened next?
The station chief said he would investigate if CIA wanted him to.
Oh, what'd they find?
Nothing. They said don't bother, it was a waste of resources.
Oh, tracking down the most evil man alive is a waste of resources.
Apparently so.
Yeah, the CIA picked a strange time to suddenly become budget conscious.
Maybe not so strange.
What do you mean?
The eyewitness accounts go on and on. Hernan Ancin, a local carpenter, saw him at least five times.
Debe haber sido fines del 53.
¿Y en qué circunstancias?
Vino ahí, venía.
¿A dónde?
Al edificio a hablar con Pavelich. Venía caminando con los tres guardaespaldas y la señora. prácticamente lo traían caminando, ¿no? Que apenas caminaba él.
Tenía la misma pinta.
La misma, de blanco, pelo corto, tipo militar, cortado, sin bigote. Bueno, ahí estuve yo conversando, me invitaron a sentarme en la mesa, me convidó la señora de Pavelich con un café. Hitler estaba tomando café con alguna bebida más con Pavelich. Y yo ahí le conté. Entonces, Pavelich le dice a Hitler, es el carpintero, dice que me hace la carpintería en el edificio. Entonces Hitler me miró y me hizo una reverencia así, en esta forma. Un saludo, ¿no? Más cerca de él. Estuve tomando café, inclusive.
¿Usted está convencido que la
gente? Sí.
Local records track shipments of Hitler's medications. Then morphine delivery started. His health was failing fast. Security tightened. No visitors were allowed past the main gate. Deliveries stopped half a mile from the house. Ava Brown took their daughter and left. By 1961, he rarely left his room. His mind was unraveling. Staff heard him talking to himself for hours. The next day at 3 p.m., Hitler died. He was 72 years old. Dr. Lehmann's final diary entry read, I fear I've outlived my usefulness. It was the last anyone ever saw of Otto Lehmann. After Hitler's death, the Nazi paradise in Argentina began to crumble. But that's not the real story. The truth is far worse. Argentina wasn't the country who protected the most Nazis. That was us. The United States didn't just defeat the Nazis, we absorbed them. Eli Rosenbaum and Mike McQueen worked for the Justice Department. The Office of Special Investigation hunted Nazis. In 1994, they investigated a possible Nazi living in Boston working at a camera repair shop. The suspect turned out to be Alexandras Lalaikis. Lalaikis ran the Lithuanian security police, directly responsible for sending thousands of Jews to their deaths. The CIA recruited him in 1952 to spy in East Germany. Then they helped him move to America and hid his war crimes from immigration. When OSI tried to bring charges, the CIA resisted, even though they knew exactly what he'd done. But as the investigation continued, they found something worse than a Nazi in hiding. They found a network of Nazis recruited by and paid by the CIA. Thousands of them.
Author of a new book that unveils the secret history of how America became a safe haven for thousands of Nazi war criminals. Many of them were brought here after World War II by the CIA and got support from FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover.
The thinking was that no one hated the Soviets more than the Nazis, and American intelligence gurus like J. Edgar Hoover at the FBI and Alan Dulles at the CIA wanted to put that hatred and that vitriol and that expertise against the Soviets to work by anointing the ex-Nazi spies as American spies, Cold War spies and informants.
The CIA and FBI had been protecting some of the most evil men in history for years. Otto von Bolschwing was a successful California businessman. He was also Adolf Eichmann's mentor in implementing anti-Jewish programs. When Israel captured Eichmann in 1960, the CIA helped von Bolschwing avoid exposure.
And so they came. Thousands of Nazi collaborators scattered across America, in Queens, in Boston, in Baltimore, in Washington, in Chicago, in Los Angeles.
Klaus Barbie was called the Butcher of Lyon for torturing members of the French Resistance. When France tried extraditing him for war crimes, the CIA refused. His anti-communist intelligence work was more important than justice for his victims. France pressed, so the CIA then helped him escape to Bolivia.
I thought they were just supposed to pick up, a few rocket scientists.
Operation Paperclip brought in some of the world's most brilliant scientists and engineers. They also happened to be vicious war criminals. Kurt DeBus, Arthur Rudolph, Herbert Reese, Walter Dornberger, Erwin Oberth, George Rickey, Konrad Dannenberger, Ernst Stullinger, and Wernher von Braun became the backbone of NASA. They got America to the moon by converting their V-2 rocket from a weapon into the Saturn V spacecraft. The V-2 was built with slave labor from concentration camps. 20,000 innocent people were worked to death to build those rockets. Anyone who complained was hung in the factory. The factory was run by those nine men and others. They said they didn't know. Arthur Rudolph received the American Distinguished Service Medal while the military buried his past. When investigators finally caught up with him, he fled to Germany. Hubertus Strughold is known as the father of space medicine. He helped astronauts prepare for spaceflight. In Germany, he conducted experiments on children. He put them in vacuum chambers to simulate the effects of high-altitude sickness, such as hypoxia.
So you see him here on the right with a flight simulator that he set up in Texas. He also had a flight simulator, not unlike this, in Dachau during the war at the concentration camp. That was where they would put children and subject them to far greater levels of pressure and gravitational pull to the point that many of them died.
He was on the U.S. military's list of war criminals since 1945. But his background was hidden until after his death. Siegfried Roop worked with him. After he was acquitted at Nuremberg, the U.S. Army hired him. Eric Straub ran the Nazi bioweapons program and reported directly to Himmler. The U.S. Army recruited him to research bioweapons. I have an episode that might prove Lyme disease is actually a U.S. bioweapons accident.
Killer insects linked down in the stash can.
Walter Strieber, Kurt Blom, Theodor Benziger, Otto Ambrose, and Friedrich Hoffmann were chemists and scientists, all connected with slave labor and experimenting on prisoners. All were recruited and protected by the CIA. And the list goes on, but I won't make you suffer while I try to pronounce German names. America recruited over 1,600 Nazi scientists after the war. But they didn't just help scientists escape, they helped everyone escape. War criminals, SS officers, concentration camp guards. They created new identities. They destroyed records. They buried evidence. At least 10,000 Nazis found refuge in America through CIA and FBI protection. And these were just the ones we know about. In 1998, the CIA admitted destroying thousands of files related to Nazi recruitment. They claimed it was routine file maintenance. Investigators found shredding orders dated just days after Congress requested the documents. A lot of document requests came back with destroyed in fire.
Uh-huh.
Thousands of Nazi war criminals died peacefully in American suburbs. The agencies meant to protect us actually protected them. And they hid this from us until legislation forced them to declassify their files.
You know, there were so many things that occurred to me at the time. Well, why did this happen? Why did the government allow them to come here? Who was responsible for this? But I said to myself, the most important thing now is to find out how many Nazis there are and bring them to justice. We can find out the history later.
And the files show that things are even worse.
It always gets worse.
There was something that made Hitler's escape look trivial. Operation Sunrise. While America publicly fought the Nazis, Alan Dulles, future head of the CIA, was secretly negotiating with SS General Karl Wolff to protect key Nazi officials. While American soldiers were giving their lives to liberate Europe, Dulles and Wolff sat by the fire, drank scotch, and conspired in German.
Whoa, Dulles was speaking German to a Nazi during a war?
He was. And there's a reason for that. If you want a full episode on Alan Dulles and his brother, let me know. But let me know fast before they delete this channel.
No, I'll delete you.
Right. So, Hitler died in his bunker. That's history. But history is written by the victors. The true history of World War II was written before the war even ended. Society enforces an unspoken rule. Hitler died in that bunker. Period. Question this and you'll face immediate hostility. You're a crazy conspiracy theorist. We can't even ask questions about his escape because the alternative is unthinkable. If the most evil man in history got away, what else did we get wrong? In 1945, Stalin said he escaped to Argentina with the help of the United States. Now that's unacceptable to the American public. Stalin was spreading misinformation. The US said Hitler was dead, but American intelligence wasn't so sure. A few years ago, over 700 pages of FBI files were declassified. The FBI had a special task force especially created to find Hitler. The lead agent believed he was alive, but still in Europe, not Argentina. Now, most of those sightings were debunked, but not all. The truth is, there's no hard evidence that Hitler died in the bunker. The mainstream narrative says there is evidence, but that's not quite true. At the end of the war, the Soviets said they found Hitler's body. Then Stalin gave orders. He escaped to Argentina. Their story kept changing. For years, nobody really knew. In 1968, the Soviets finally claimed to have his complete body, but then they said they had just fragments of his skull. In 2009, the Russian government finally allowed DNA testing of the alleged skull fragment they'd held for decades. It belonged to a woman under 40.
Oh, no.
The Russians have a section of his jawbone, they say.
Show him a picture of the chappas. Let's see the chappas.
No. If you want to see that, you can find plenty of pictures online. If I show those teeth, this video is going to be demonetized and buried.
Oh, you're way past that, Chief. This episode is never going to see the light of day.
Probably. Anyway, they say the teeth match Hitler's dental records. Great, let's see the records. They disappeared. New evidence came from dental records drawn from a dental hygienist's memory. Years later, x-rays appeared. What's the truth?
Well, let's DNA test the teeth and see if they come from the same head.
Can't. They're too badly burned, they say.
Yeah, but we can try.
Nah. After the Russians were embarrassed in 2009, they stopped cooperating. They got Hitler, and that's that. Their files are sealed. Argentina's files are sealed. Most of America's files are still sealed. At least the ones they didn't shred or burn. Now, I'm not making the case that Hitler escaped. I gave you a lot of information today, and there were links below to more. You decide for yourself. And I'm not judging whether Operation Paperclip was justified. Maybe saving 10,000 Nazis saved more American lives because they provided vital intelligence. Maybe they saved lives with their scientific contributions. Maybe. I can't make that judgment. But the victims of Nazi war crimes and their families can make that judgment. Either way, we should be allowed to know the full truth of what happened after the war. For example, we know the Allies liberated concentration camps, but we have this image of soldiers opening the gates and happy prisoners running out and hugging them.
That's not what happened.
Oh, no. There was nowhere to put displaced persons, as they were called, so they had to stay there. But now the same Germans who guarded them were prisoners in there with them. In some cases, they were forced to bunk together. General Patton, old blood and guts himself, appointed former SS officers to oversee the camps. He felt they were most qualified for maintaining order and administration. He respected the Nazis more than he did the Jews. A lot more, if you read up on it. But you won't find much about his anti-Semitism in the books and movies about him. When Eisenhower found out what he was doing, Patton was transferred, essentially demotioned to a paperwork position. So was Patton a hero or a villain? Or is the answer more gray? We can't really answer these questions unless we have the full truth.
You must remember that in 1969 and 1950s and 1960s, J. Edgar Hoover was probably the most powerful man in Washington. No president could ask him to retire. No congressional committee, no Senate committee could ever hold him truly accountable for what he was doing with the FBI and its dirty tricks.
Dulles, it was one of the intelligence titans of the 1950s, one of the original Cold Warriors. And he was someone who believed that there were, quote unquote, moderate Nazis, his words, who the U.S. could use to its advantage in the Cold War. He actively recruited them himself and in a number of cases, intervened on their behalf when they were facing accusations about their past, about their involvement in Nazi war crimes. And he and J. Edgar Hoover were really the two linchpins in this, in developing this strategy of recruiting ex-Nazis as Cold Warriors, as Soviet, anti-Soviet assets.
Now, I love my country, and I always will. But to love something requires knowing the full truth of it. We deserve to know the full truth of American Nazi cooperation. But we're not allowed to ask about Patton, about the CIA, or about Hitler. That's why this story stays buried. That's why theories are ridiculed. And that's why videos like this are demonetized and hidden. Because investigating Hitler's escape might reveal something ugly about the American military and intelligence agencies. That evil didn't die in that bunker. It just changed uniforms. Thank you so much for hanging out today. My name is AJ. There's Hacklefish.
Oh, we're still here? I figured this video would be deleted by now.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if we get demonetized. Everything I said today was true, and everything I speculated, I disclosed. We'll find out where they stand on this. Anyway, this has been The Y Files. If you had fun or learned anything, do him a favor, like, subscribe, comment, share. That stuff really helps the channel, especially when we release videos like this. I held back on this one a long time. Like most topics we cover here, today's was recommended by you. I wish you didn't, but I covered it. And if there's a story you'd like to see or learn more about, go to thewyfiles.com/tips. And remember, The Y Files is also a podcast. Twice a week, I post deep dives into the stories we cover here, and I also post episodes that wouldn't be allowed here, like this one. Well, less allowed. Anyway, it's called The Y Files Operation Podcast, and it's available everywhere you get your podcasts. If you need more Y Files in your life, and who doesn't? Okay, some people really don't need more. But if you do, check out our Discord server. There are 50, 60,000 people on there. So someone's on there 24/7 and they're into the same stuff that we are. It's a great community, really supportive, a lot of fun, and it's free to join. If you want to know what's going on with The Y-Files, check out our production calendar. It's at thewyfiles.com/cal. There we post our episode schedule, upcoming podcasts, live streams, everything. Special thanks to our patrons who make this channel possible. Every episode of The Y-Files is dedicated to our Patreon members. I couldn't do this without you. You're the only reason that I released this episode, because I know we're going to take a hit on it. And if you'd like to support the channel, keep us going, and keep us brave, consider becoming a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get access to perks like videos early with no commercials, access to merch only available to members, plus 2 private live streams every week just for you. The whole Y-Files team is on the stream. My camera's on, theirs is on. Turn your camera on, come on stage, ask a question, suggest a topic, talk about anything you want. I think it's the best perk there is. But another great way to support the channel is grab something from the Y-Files store.
Grab a heck of a t-shirt or one of these fistable coffee mugs that you can rule with an iron fist and stick right in this mug there. Or drink a delicious beverage of your choice. It's none of my concern. Or grab a hoodie or one of these squeezy... Not yet with the squeezy. First, we got to talk about these creepy U2's voodoo dolls. And then we can talk about the squeezy animal stuffed... Heck, oh, my goodness. Hey, can I do this one again? And the stuffed... Squeezy toys.
Those are the plugs. Woo! That's gonna do it. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.
A secret code inside the Bible said I was. I love my UFOs and paranormal fun, as well as music, so I'm singing like I should. But then another conspiracy theory becomes the truth, my friends, and it never ends. No, it never ends. The crap cat and got stuck inside Mel's home with MK Ultra. I've been only too aware. Did Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing alone on a film set, or were the shadow people there? The Roswell aliens just fought the smiling man, I'm told, and his name was Cold. And I can't believe the solar storm still come to a Agatha, the secret city underground. Mysterious number stations, planet Serpo 2, Project Stargate, and what the Dark Watchers found. In a simulation, don't you worry though, the Black Knight satellite, it told me so. I can't believe